Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast. Today is easy, April Fool's Day, April 1st.
Yep.
Taxes is coming.
Not till May now.
Oh, what?
Yeah, you don't have to file till May 15th.
Good, because I ain't filed my shit anyway.
May 17th.
I don't be pressing about that shit. Your niggas be all right. I'm not saying don't file your shit.
Definitely
like
file your taxes.
6 months late. Yeah, well, definitely file them. And don't file your shit 6 months late.
Right.
But if it's April 21st, it ain't going to be like you're going to, you'd be all right.
I've said on here before, I'm going to be on a payment plan to that IRS for the rest of my life.
Me too.
Well, now that the IRS is staffed again and has a director, we might want to get in line.
That too. They got somebody actually working. Hey, Ivy. Ivy's back there.
Hi, Ivy.
Ivy always got to let us know, like,
I'm in the building.
I'm just chilling in the background. She got to be.
She's in the building. She's in the building.
If I answer the door, trying to type something quietly, she got to come sneak, push a button.
Right.
And mess up my flow.
It is A-OK with us. Pop Life Podcast, love the kids.
Wow.
I got my first shot.
How you feel?
Yay.
You know what? It's crazy because I don't know if you can hear. You probably can. I got a little cold, but it was coming before the shot.
Right. The weather is that way. You know it's pneumonia weather.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pneumonia weather. You got to be careful. Cover up your neck and your ears.
Because see, for those who don't live in New York, which are many people.
Right.
What happens in New York, excuse me, this is kind of weird, in the fall and in the spring. So in the fall, what happens is there's usually like a week, sometimes even 2 weeks, fall into winter, where, okay, so by law, the heat can't come on in New
until
York City. October 15th.
October 15th. And then when it drops below 50-something degrees.
Something like that. So if it's like 60 or something like that, like we get these little spots in October where it'll be cold as shit in the crib, but we ain't got no heat because
we don't have heat
yet. Kind of come on. It's weird. Yeah. You know, and then in the spring, it happens the other way. When we'll get a day, it'll be really warm, but the heat is on.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the heat can't go off until, I don't know what day, but I think it's April something.
We're close. Because it was chilly this week and the heat did not come on.
Exactly. So it was hot in my crib a couple weeks ago. Less than a week, 10 days ago, whatever. So I put the fan on in the bedroom.
Right.
And slept under the fan. And I think that's what caused this cold to kick in.
But and for those who are asking, like, what do you mean the heat can't come on? Don't you have a thermostat? A large amount of New York, even though you guys may see fancy new construction, my building is 100 years old, right? We have radiator heat.
Yeah.
And that radiator heat is controlled from a boiler in the basement.
That controls
the whole building, and it sounds really loud and like go sit in your house when it's coming up. Mm-hmm. But it's steam heat, basically.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
when it's hot, it's fucking
it's hot.
I've
been in here in the wintertime when it's like 22 degrees outside, and I put the screen in the window because it'd be hot.
I don't know if I shared this on here, but I found out that the reason the radiators are like that is because the design was created during the flu pandemic, and it was supposed to be because they thought the steam could help. I might be getting it a little bit wrong, but not too much. They thought the steam could help clear out the system, but they also want you to be able to open your window and get fresh air.
Oh.
Because, you know, they wanted you to be able to have air circulating. So it's hot to the point to make you want to open your window in the wintertime design. And most of us know these radiators. These are all the same fucking radiators.
They make the noise and all that.
There's not a lot of stories that you guys tell about living in New York City that make me want to live there.
No, you good. No, you are,
I want to turn on my fucking heat.
It's a thing, but you know, you get so used to it.
It just is.
I mean, I'll be honest. I would love the control of a thermostat. Like, I would love that. That's the
most we have, if you get lucky. Well, I don't know if it's lucky or sometimes
it adds character,
we have the standalone radiator that has the wheel on the side,
the knob on the side,
chop it down. But there ain't no pushing a button that's saying 68 degrees. So I think that's what causes cold. But you know me, I started getting panicked. I said, nigga, I got the Rona. You know what I'm saying? I had just come back from Atlanta. So one night I was in the bed like, man, nigga, I got the Rona. I might die. Like, what's going to happen? Like,
oh, Lord Jesus.
You know, you get those late nights. It was 3 a.m. I'm like, nigga, I'm die from the Rona. I got shit to do. Like, damn. You know, but I ain't got the Rona. I just got a cold, and because I have literally no Rona symptoms, and I know obviously what a cold feels like, so it's kind of coming out of me now. So
I've been having some congestion, sinus congestion stuff too. But my shot was over a week ago, so I don't think it's that. I just think it's the back foot. Because last weekend, I want to say from Thursday through like Saturday, like the weather was popping.
It was dope. Beautiful.
And then we dropped to like 50 degrees. We dropped from like high 60s to like 50.
Off a cliff.
Oh, y'all know it snowed here last night and this morning.
How many inches did y'all get?
It didn't accumulate. It's just been snowing and not sticking.
Just that nasty. Yeah. Anyway, so I got my first shot on Wednesday. I felt no symptoms at all. Like a little, my arm was barely sore. It was a little teeny bit. But a piece to the armory up here, 168, 169th Street, because they got it down to a science. You know,
it's so efficient.
It's like boom, boom, boom. You know, you fill a little paperwork, boom, boom. Then you go over here, you go over there, you go over there. They take you right to the spot, boom. And you got to sit down for a few minutes afterwards.
You only have to sit down for a few minutes to check
like 15
in.
Minutes.
But there's no, when you check in. Like you just sit check in, yeah. Other people. But there was no, both times I went, there was no real waiting time and any of it. Like,
now you're always moving. You're always like moving.
Yeah.
But it made me sit down for like about 15 minutes after the shot. I guess to make sure nothing happened.
They want to make sure you don't have any adverse effects.
Exactly. But it was cool. Like I said, so piece of them, they got it down to a science. I go back on April 20th for the second. So piece of them. And
if you went to the Army, that means you got Pfizer, right?
Yes.
So Pfizer, again, like I said, the second shot, for me, and it might have been because I was taking pain relievers before and after, and I kept moving my arm. Like, all day I was, like, moving my arm, swinging my arm, doing stuff. But the soreness, after the first day, and even the first day, it never got that bad.
Yeah, it was
like, the second morning when I woke up was the worst, and that was just because it was stiff. But I never, my soreness for the second shot was never that bad.
So it was good. It was good. I want to say real quick, watch the NAACP Awards Saturday. You know, of course, it's over the moon that D-Nice got the Entertainer of the Year Award.
Well deserved.
The show wasn't as great to me, but understandably, because, you know, especially with Black people, like we have to be amongst each other for the energy. And obviously, you couldn't because of the pandemic, so everything was remote. But it was still, they did as well as they could do. So I'm not here I'm not trying to dog them or shit at them. They did as well as they could do, but it just wasn't as exciting, but understandably so. But again, still saying peace to Derek.
But what I really loved was all the nominees posting their looks instead of there being a red carpet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, everybody looked good.
Everybody looked great.
Yeah, everybody looked
We're not gonna come out looking raggedy now. We're not doing that.
Not to the Image Awards.
No, we
do not have step to the Image Awards. That's one thing we don't do. But also, I want to also shout out, and I doubt he listens to the show, but some people might. Kev on Stage, who is an Instagram comedian anymore because he has the whole media company now.
Yeah.
I don't know if he won, but he was nominated for something, and his wife had thrown him like a whole little private dinner before. But like, I just love their family, and they're just such good people.
Are they from here?
No, they're from I'm thinking Texas. I don't know why that's in my head. I might be making that up. But yeah, I just think they're such a cute couple. They've been together since like high school or college. I love their story. I think he's funny and kind.
He is funny.
And you know, puts people on, and yeah, and just really talented. So I just want to shout him out. And that's, again, I also love that people are paying attention to the Image Awards again, because they're important, right?
They are like, important. They're very important.
BET Awards can't do everything. Like, we need Soul Train. We need the Image Awards. They both precede the BET Awards. BET back shit from both of them. So, like,
And the Image Awards still get, like, a high-end, like, Viola Davis and her husband. They still get a high-end.
People show up.
Yeah, people show up for the Image Awards. So, like, yes, yeah. I'm happy.
No, oh, and shout out, Swizz and Tim were honored. Versus was honored too.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah. Real quick. I actually caught the end of it, but I caught a good part. So peace to Mona Me Entertainment and Mona Sky Young. She has Uncensored out.
Oh, I didn't watch that.
Yeah, yeah. I caught it just random tail end, but the part I caught was about Sean.
Oh,
we love that.
She basically ends the. Her last segment is just about her family, and so she talks about Sean and how they met, and how, you know, how he's a great husband and supportive, and you know such a great father. And then they show, you know, pictures of Jordan and pictures of Justin, and you know, so it's just a whole family kind of thing. I was like, oh shit, look at bruh, you know what I'm saying? And actually, there's a couple of the pictures that they showed of them together. I was like, oh shit, I was there. So that's one. I want to give them a shout out. I don't know what time bruh's coming on, so I didn't want to wait too long before I forget and move on to the next thing. So that was dope. I want to talk real quick about the Zola trailer.
I still haven't watched it. I need to watch it. I heard it's great.
I'm so excited.
The trailer is hot. If this movie is as good as the trailer, they nailed it. And they're using literal Twitter. They're using dialogue from the thread.
Perfect.
From the tweets. Like, it's from so good. Even the casting. It's perfect. What I pictured in my head.
Who is that black girl? What have I seen her in?
That is Taylor. I forget her last name. She's engaged or is the girlfriend of the guy from Grey's Anatomy with the light eyes.
Oh, Jesse.
Jesse
Williams.
Oh, that's who you left wifey for?
No, they were already done before they got together.
Allegedly, but anyway.
His divorce has been going on for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, so. I still don't think it's final.
It is.
Oh, it's final now?
Yeah, this
year. Okay. But I've seen her. I've seen her in something. I gotta, you know, I don't know.
Can't remember.
But she
what
fucking
and she's and a the great
white
actress.
The white girl. Or what?
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. She played the girlfriend.
Okay. And the white girl is, yo, she nails it.
She's like just the right amount of trashy for it to work.
Yep.
I'm excited.
Trashy, but kind of got like heart, like, and then
like the entire story.
Like the entire story. I forget old boy.
Trashy with a heart.
Pimp. Old boy's playing the pimp.
Coleman.
He's been in.
He was also in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Yes. So anyway, I suggest people watch the trailer. It looks phenomenal. Like it's obviously going to be such a Twitter thing because the story literally came from that. And I don't know. So I'm talking shit because I don't know. But as far as I know, and I'm probably wrong, but as far as I know, this is the first Twitter kind of thread thing that has become an actual feature film that I know of. So it's a big deal.
Probably because you know that Zola story was one of the first.
Cause what was that? 18, 17, maybe when that came out.
I was just about to say, I think it was 17, 18.
Okay,
I think it was 17. That was one of the first times, because I want to say that threading wasn't that old yet. And it was also one of the first times that somebody told a story that wasn't like a fly-out story or a, you know what I'm saying? Like, we did have those whole, you know, Twitter stories that were like crazy and going left, but this one felt like it had a whole arc and it had suspense and it did.
It really
I remember
did.
Early on in the Clubhouse days, a bunch of us late one night, like at 3 a.m, we did a live reading of the tweet. We pulled up the thread and did a live read.
Really?
You know, Clubhouse.
That shit was amazing.
It was the parts. But yeah, it was so amazing.
And then when you find out that it was true, like it actually happened. Because I'm sure there's embellishing.
I was about to say she put some sauce on it.
Yeah, she put a little hot sauce on it.
That is the thing that happened.
But it was still just like, oh wait, because remember she started, if I'm not mistaken, she started kind of like showing little things to show that it happened.
Yeah, like I think she kind of
evidence
like,
things.
Oh, she told the white girl at least. I know she did that.
Yeah.
She showed the girl.
Yeah, so definitely excited about that. Right now they say it's a feature release, but I don't know if they're gonna, I guess they'll do a streaming thing after, but really excited about that. Wanted to mention Justice League. Nah, I know you don't care. Have you watched it yet, Inka? Did Trav watch it?
I will not be watching it. Wanting to watch it, but he just doesn't have 4 hours to hang out and watch a movie right now.
Tell your man, watch that shit.
Why is it 4 hours?
Because what happened was this. Zack Snyder, who was the director, he was doing the original, he was doing a Justice League. And in the midst of production, his daughter died. I don't think she might have committed suicide even. So tragically, obviously, right? So he dropped out. And then Josh Whedon, who's another famous director, he picked it up. And Josh Whedon took the script and the movie and just twisted it and made it like, he made it a 2-hour film. He cut down huge chunks of the plot lines. He made it like comedic. He like really pushed Wonder Woman to the side. Even the look of the movie was very kind of bright and colorful. And the movie was a brick. I mean, it made money.
Right, that's why I wasn't going to watch this one, because I was like, wasn't the last one like terrible?
No, so then Josh Snyder, you know, got to the space where he was ready to work again. And he had all the footage of what he did. Because he had finished filming. He hadn't got to edit. So he had all the footage in his laptop of everything he did. So he's like, yo, that shit y'all put out was trash. It wasn't my vision. Let me put out my vision. And they're like, yo, it's already paid for. Like, fuck it. So he edited his own version. And because he edited on the computer, it wasn't for a feature release. That's why he could make it like, you always hear about these films. Yo, the original version was 3.5 hours.
That's
this version. It's a 4-hour movie. But I promise you, you don't feel the 4 hours at all. It blows by. The story is like way more in depth. It makes much more sense. The action sequences are phenomenal. Like, the shit is dope. I'm telling you, the Zack Snyder version of Justice League is dope. And tell your man Trav, watch that shit. Because I know he's a comic book
dude. I told him he's got a 4-day weekend, so he'll probably get into it this weekend.
So he won't be mad. He won't be mad at the 4 hours. He won't feel like he wasted 4 hours.
So you're saying,
here you go.
You don't feel 4 hours.
No, bro. I'm telling you, shit. because the movie is constantly moving. It's constantly moving. It's not like long, like monologues and shit. It's just like, I'm telling you, bro.
Okay.
Even if you do, like, you could, obviously, you watch it at home, so you can break it up however you want. I'm just telling.
Nigga, I'm not breaking up a movie. There's no movie I need to break. And nigga, if I got to break it up, nigga, it's broke. You ain't got to worry about it.
All right, cool. I'm telling you to watch the shit. All right. And I'm not even a DC guy. Like, I'm not even that guy, but this shit was hot.
Aside from Batman, I'm not a DC person either. So that's...
Justice League was popping. Let's see, what else can we get into real quick before we get a little deeper? Okay, I'm gonna give y'all the one journal. You know, every week I give y'all something I'm watching that's kind of off the beaten path. This one's way off the beaten path, but it's interestingly very compelling. So it's a series called Schitzel, right? It's on Netflix. It's based in Jerusalem. It's about this ultra Orthodox family.
I scrolled past it. I didn't watch it, but I saw it.
It's 3 seasons. It's been coming on since 2013. So I guess the seasons come far in between each other. I'm only deep into season one. But it's like oddly compelling. You know, they're speaking, you know, Hebrew and Yiddish at times. But this is a very oddly compelling series. Like, it's really keeping my interest. It's like, you know, you have the patriarch of the family and his son and his brothers and sisters and kind of like what they're dealing with as far as trying to get him married and, you know, their mom passed and the stuff going on with that and one of the sisters' husbands left her. And it's just, I doubt any of y'all will watch it, but it's really good.
You watched Unorthodox, right?
Yeah, the girl from Unorthodox.
I tried to start Unorthodox and it didn't. I got to try it again.
Unorthodox is dope.
Unorthodox, yeah. That I would watch dope. That again, honestly. That but is it? Great. How is it in comparison to Unorthodox? Is it along the same lines, less intense?
Kind of along the same lines. It's not quite as intense as that because nobody's like escaping, you know. But the the pressure of like being in that community and the things that come along with that, and people trying to like find a little niche within that community, all of that is there. And the girl who was in Unorthodox is in this. Mm-hmm. She's much younger at the time. She's in this. She's like,
she won the Emmy for that, for Unorthodox. Yeah. So yeah,
but even in this, I'll check it out. You see her as a even as a young girl actress. You see it, right? You see that thing she has. It's like, oh, because she's not even a star in this at all. But even right away, you're like, oh, that girl's different. Like she's special at this.
She's got it. Yeah,
she's got it. Yeah. So that's my Schitzel thing. Oh, one more. I watched King Kong vs. Godzilla. She was trash.
Is it 1950? How many versions of King Kong versus Godzilla are there in the universe?
There's only really like three or four of that particular pairing. But there's obviously Godzilla, there's Mothra, there's Rodan, there's, you know, King Kong, there's all kind of stuff. I was disappointed, man. Just storyline is goofy. Yeah, I do not recommend.
Okay, no.
That's not one of the ones I'd even say, yo, if it's a rainy day, even on a rainy day, watch something else. You know what I'm saying?
Damn.
Yeah, I just didn't enjoy it. Oh, bro, I got to tell you, I gave you a shout out right before you got on because I caught the end of Mona's Uncensored.
Ah, okay.
She was talking about you and the kids. And
okay.
So I just randomly one night, laying in bed, I'm flicking and I'm like, oh. And that's the only part I caught. So I got to watch.
Yeah. It came on Sunday, I think like 10. Then yeah. It comes on after Unsung.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it might have been Sunday night, actually, like late night when I watched it too.
Yeah, because you know TV One, man, you gonna get them two programs to about 4 in the morning. Right. Them sisters on loop.
Back to back to back.
Till when your man rolling to somebody come on.
Word. And break up the monotony. Or somebody sell Blessed Earls.
Somebody sell Blessed Earls. And definitely.
And prayer cloths at 5 in the morning. Inka, you want to talk about Love and Marriage Huntsville season finale?
What's it, the season finale? That seems weird because it's episode 19.
Yeah, and next week we get this week we get a behind the scenes thing, but it looks like it's a lot of action in it though.
I don't think it's the season finale, but anyway, I'm really, this is going to sound weird, but I'm concerned about Martell. I think there's something going on there.
Something wrong.
Where he's not perceiving reality the way the rest of us do. Something's happening there.
And now all this stuff is coming out that apparently he has, well, the side piece that we know about had the baby, I think a week or two ago.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this because the homophobia that he displayed in the last episode kind of blinded me to whatever else was happening.
Yeah, so his side piece.
But yeah, so he has like a little girl that the same age as one of Mal's other kids.
No, not that side piece. That's what I'm saying. The Ariane, who was the side piece, she just had the baby, like the baby.
She just had like, it. No, no, like no. A week that's or two like ago. An older little girl.
The one that's online is an older.
Oh God!
So he's actually got two outside babies, allegedly, that we know of.
I don't feel like it's alleged.
I don't think
because he says my daughter in the screenshot she released, but
So
I had to. It's a lot happening there. It's just
it's almost
bad marriages. Weird. I do appreciate that the cigar bar is open or softly opened or whatever. It looks really nice. I'm glad they got it. Finished.
Yeah.
They have a cigar shop.
Yeah. In Huntsville. Mm-hmm.
It's a cigar lounge. We do not know if they sell cigars. Is that the? Are we correct in that?
I don't know.
I can just tell you from a little bit of experience. No bullshit. It's very expensive to get into that business because you have to put up a lot of upfront money.
I'm sure.
Particularly for high-end brands. Like, I know I was talking to a cigar shop owner, and they basically were like, Davidoff, the joints you had bought me for my birthday one year, they were like, unless you're spending $25,000, Davidoff isn't even sending a rep to you.
Damn.
Wow.
Right? Like, that's because, you know what I'm saying? Like, so you're talking about substantial orders. So that's why a lot of times when you go into smaller cigar shops, you see smaller selections. You see an off-brand. You might see a homemade, you know, home, a house brand, house blend, or something like that. Is because it really costs a lot for you to get access to, you know,
the higher end stuff.
Yeah, to the higher end shit, and you have to. Yeah, you know, you got to maintain that. You know, cigars are, you know, you can keep them for a long time, but there is some level of turnover, right? Like, you got to sell it.
Yeah, it's got to go. It's got to go. Let's move on, because it's we could spend an hour on that show. This season particularly was just so
just very sad and draining.
It was draining. It was emotionally draining. So much going on. Did you go to Cam's shop, or you just saw it online?
I didn't. I saw it. I watched a bit of him and Steve. Apparently that's his shop. He does have a shop in Atlanta.
He got a shop in Atlanta. He definitely got one.
I was actually working. Like, I was actually doing so much shit that I really didn't get time. And honestly, I was still a little shook with the whole going out in Atlanta thing.
Because
niggas was really wilding.
Niggas be outside.
Yeah, so I do want to go. Like, my next trip, I'll probably go, but I'll try to go during the day.
Okay. Yeah.
Just to get the feel, get the vibe of it. But I love shops like that.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. I mean, I'm not a smoker, but people I know who have been said it's really, really well done. You know what? Let's go early. Let's jump on.
Hold on. Before you get to smoking, Shit, let me start.
Speaking of smoking,
shout out to the New York State Senate and House for taking the step to legalize marijuana in
Finally, now we just got to figure out how to reduce the sentences of everybody in jail for minor possession.
Minor. Niggas up at Clinton.
Yeah, they're talking about expungement and all that.
They should. So, Jesus Christ. Weed niggas fighting for their lives over some weed. This is crazy. I want to jump into Tina Early. Tina Turner's documentary.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, you wild.
Oh, man, I was so looking forward to hearing what you had to say about it.
I watched it the other day, and don't ask me what happened. I think it might have been yesterday, and everything happened I told y'all about. But day before yesterday when it started. But I meant to watch it, but I've heard phenomenal things about it. And I also find it really interesting that apparently this is Tina's public goodbye. Like, she doesn't have anything anymore.
She says it. She's like, I'm not coming back to the States ever again. Like, ever again. I'm Gucci. They show her come to the opening of the play. And she's like, that's it. I'm done. I'm tired. I'm not in great health, and I'm retiring. But she didn't say retiring, but she says basically, like, when do you say goodbye? She says, so I'm picking my time to say goodbye. So she's like, that's it. I'm never coming back. I'm never performing again.
I dig
y'all niggas won't see me again. And she got
in a flurry of love, because I've seen nothing.
And she obviously got more than enough money to be good. And yeah, that's it. But documentary's phenomenal. It really talks about everything you would want to know. From her beginning, she talks about, you know, being raised in Nutbush, Tennessee, and picking cotton, and, you know, violence in her early life, you know, with her parents and stuff like that, and how her mother and father abandoned her, and her path to St. Louis, and meeting Ike for the first time. And there's a couple of people who are still alive, God bless, who were in that band, who talk about it, you know, because apparently when she met Ike, unlike in the movie, you know, the movie's a movie, so they're going to embellish, but in real life, Ike looked at her like a little sister. They weren't having sex and stuff. That was like his little sister, because she's...
Tina also already had a child when she got with Ike.
Yeah, she already had a child by another band member. And so they talk about all that, and, you know, obviously the rise of, they talk about Ike a little bit, and how he wrote basically which is considered the first rock and roll song, which is a song called Rocket 88 that he wrote, him and his band wrote on the way to a show.
That somebody else is on the credits for.
Somebody in the band, and the Ike's in the background on the piano. And that they said that caught one of the things that caused Ike to be like, you're just going to leave me. You're just going to leave me, because it happened when he was young with his family. And then it happened too, when people come in his band and blow up and then they would leave. So he's a very insecure man. I didn't know this. His mother raised B.B. King.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. His mother raised B.B. King in Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Home of the great legendary Sam Cooke.
Is that where Sam is from too?
Sam is from Clarksdale. Yeah. Clarksdale got a whole bunch of talent. Like you said, B.B. King, White, Sam Cooke. Yeah, that's where they from. Now, Sam went to Chicago, obviously. But that's where he was born.
That's where he's from, though. From. Yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. Yeah, but it's just a great documentary, compelling. I mean, just on some of the up notes, like I remember being like a really really small kid, like watching Ike and Tina when they would come on, the Merv Griffin show or Don Kirshner's rock concert or whatever. But I just remember like it was so interesting how it was like controlled chaos.
Right.
There'll be so much going on, but it was actually set to be that way. But and then
it was
they showed
choreographed, this over here, this floor over here, stuff over here, this.
Yeah, the girls and the dancing, the choreography with the girls and Tina was just like it's unfucking believable. And they showed them they would be rehearsing that shit like right before they would go on stage. They were making shit up.
I love that they have a in clip the film. They do a
No, go ahead. Sorry.
In the film, they do like almost a side by side or a really quick cut to Motown and what they were doing and how they were all in like suits and very polished choreography, and then they show Tina and the Ikettes just wilding out on stage, completely revolutionary. Even that was like, we're gonna show our whole leg and we're gonna run around on this stage the whole time,
like they doing karate and but it was just so, like I said, they showed them, they would literally be in the dressing room like, okay, what are we gonna do this time? All right, how about this? And then it would go
She said because I controlled all of the music and everything that they sounded like, that was her little piece of the control. It was like her and the girls, they got ready together. There was no hair and makeup.
They did it all themselves.
She did the costuming and she got to choreograph make the steps and kind of work with the harmonies
makeup,
that way.
Hair makeup is fairly new, just FYI.
Yeah.
Like motherfuckers.
You mean like having somebody on the road with you?
I'm not saying this as a slight.
Yeah.
I'm saying hair and makeup, that whole glam team shit, that's very new.
Yeah, yeah. They showed Tina I don't know how old she was at this point, but later on in the doc, I mean, she was grown. I don't know. She was, she was still doing her makeup. She was 60. Still like, nah, I'm doing my own shit.
Once you get used to doing your own, even B does her own makeup on tour sometimes. Really? Like, what? Yeah, because it's like as many times you got to touch up, change clothes, do the quick change, do all that other stuff. But I think also once you get used to doing your own,
And you know what you what you want and what you're gonna look like.
Yeah.
The story gets dark and all that crazy shit, but like just the performances early on, especially with they're just unbelievable to watch. It's like we're never seeing this again. Like you're never seeing Tina Turner again.
We're also never.
We saw something
from
close to her and Beyonce, but once you've seen it once, like you've seen it.
Seen Tina again. What'd you say, Inga?
I forgot. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah, but she like you're not that level of talent, that level of singing, dancing, star quality, just sex appeal. We're not. That's not happening. Like it's not
selling out stadiums at 50.
Yep.
As a solo act is absolutely unbelievable and iconic.
Yeah.
Well, that's my favorite part of Tina's story is that I think people know that the Private Dancer album that helped us love got to do it was a second chapter. But if all you're going by is the movie, you would think that like she just damn near knocked it out the park out the gate. Mm-mm. She had like two albums that stalled out. Mm-hmm. This was like one more shot to see if something would work. They weren't even sure. So they put the single out, the single Call on Fire, and they had to chase it with the album. But to be, she was 45, and to transition, and like, she wasn't an R&B star. I mean, we bought the album, obviously, but she was like a rock pop star at 45 in like a new MTV era and like killing it. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal.
But like, they even talk about that because Roger Davies obviously is in it. And he says like when he went to see her, he went to Frisco. She was doing like a review in Frisco for a few days, nights. And he said the first show was whack. He was like, yo, I'm not even really fucking with this. He said the second show was better because it was later in the evening. But even then, he was like, I don't even know what to do. So he said, you know, he got her. She wasn't signed, I don't think, at that time.
And, she wasn't signed yet.
Yeah, she wasn't signed yet. He's shopping around and, you know, she's catching L's. And then this one A&R guy, white A&R guy at Capitol Records signed her. And they kept it real. He said the dude was like, yo, New Regime came in and they wanted to drop her. And he got on the phone. I mean, you know, he went to the meeting and was like, nah, don't drop her. Like, I'm telling you. And he said that the fucking head of the company said, yo, you're the one who signed that old nigga, bitch.
Wow.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And he was like, yeah. He said he got on his knees in the meeting and was like, yo, do not drop her. And the dude said, all right, yo, we're not going to drop her, but we're not giving you a fucking dime.
Wow.
Yeah, and you have 1 year, by the way.
You got 1 year to make a record. And then they talked to the guy who made What's Love Got to Do with It. And
I didn't know it was a remake.
Yeah, it already came out.
That was so cool. Yeah, yeah.
It already came out on another band.
Some disco-y kind of band. It was a very soft sound. Yep. And it didn't have that signature, like, I don't know what you call that, that melody that we know What's Love Got to Do with It is.
Yeah, like, was that, like a pipe?
It was like, What's Love Got to Do with It? What's Love? But it was kind of like that type of energy. And of course, they changed it up in the studio and they showed them working together. And Tina didn't like the record. She was like, this is trash, bro. Like, I'm not doing this. And of course, as I say to people all the time, if you are working with an artist, if they say they don't like the record, I promise you the record's a smash. It happens.
It seems to be that way.
It happened so many times. As soon as the artist was like, this record's terrible. Usher hated
Usher hated like 80% of the songs he did with JD. With Lil Jon and JD. Like, JD got so many Usher hated the song stories.
Usher threatened Sean Garrett, like, because Sean Garrett leaked
Usher
was like, Sean Garrett told that story. You ruined my career.
Yeah.
And I'm going to fuck you up. Like, you ruined my career.
Well, also because LA, not LA, he was with Jab, but
it was LA.
They had a different direction planned. Mm-hmm. And because Sean leaked, they had to change course, which right? Yeah. But Lil Jon said he hated Lovers and Friends.
Yeah.
And Jermaine like, what the fuck is this? Because Jon played him the original reference. He was like, fuck, I'm supposed to do with this. Mm-hmm. And JD has mentioned like 8 songs that Usher hated. And Usher even said that. He's like, I hate everything. Yeah. So,
Mystical hated Shake Your Ass. He thought we were ruining his career. He's like, you niggas is killing me. You know what I'm saying? So, and obviously the rest is history. So, who's Neptune? This nigga is killing me. Like, it's like, boom. So, there's many, many stories like that. So anyway, back to Tina. Just bottom line, the documentary is phenomenal. It's very, very well done. And the other thing, which is very interesting, and you really see it, you kind of think about, I didn't really think about it, is like, she was like, yo, why did your motherfuckers keep bringing up Ike? Like, that is a horrible, horrible time in my life. And she said she did What's Love Got to Do with It. She thought that, they thought that, okay, after this movie, you guys don't ask me.
It'll put it to bed.
And it made it bigger.
That's what I was going to say. That's why people keep asking about Ike, because What's Love Got to Do with It stops at the beginning of her Private Dancer era. So that's why people will forever, and I imagine that has to be terrible to be Tina Turner, and you've acclaimed all this success on your own, you've done all these amazing things, and then people be like, so about Ike, you know what I mean? Like,
says it. She's like, yo, like, even now, like, people want to ask me about Ike.
Man is dead also. Like,
But I think that people do that because, like, we're under the impression that salaciousness is really at the root of the Bog era, but people have long wanted to sort of get reactions out of people, get them to say things or watch them squirm to some degree.
Yeah.
Those are all live shows, right? So you really don't have the opportunity to prepare for a question, right? You think you're coming in there for some softballs, and then, you know, you do your little performance, you got to 3 minutes on the couch, and 2 minutes of that shit is you talking about what I did to you what years ago.
Exactly. Literally.
They showed a bunch of clips of these interviewers asking her wild shit. Completely wild. Like, what was the worst part of being with Ike, or the worst event you can remember with Ike? Yeah. Or Ike just got arrested for, I don't know, opiates or something.
Yeah, you know about that?
How do you feel about it? She's like, I'm here to talk about Mad Max, my nigga. Like,
exactly.
Ike was out there moving bricks. Nigga. Ike was like 70.
Ike was wild.
Ike was like 70 with the bricks of Yayo on the tour bus.
Ike was wild. Yeah, the other thing was when Love Got to Do With It came out at Cannes. Obviously, it's, you know, a big thing. And so she has a press conference, and Angela Bassett is sitting there with her, and they ask her, what do you think about the movie? And
she's I ain't seen the movie. She still has never watched the movie.
Yeah, she said, because it brings up horrible memories. I did the movie kind of like to put this to bed, but I don't want to see it because I lived it. And Angela Bassett's kind of, you know, you see she's uncomfortable, just kind of like, oh, shit, I didn't really think about that, you know? But anyway.
The one thing that I will say that I think is very interesting, Romani said this on his podcast, which I definitely
agree with. Right, Sean, you're a little low.
Okay, you guys go ahead.
Okay. No. Just amplify a little bit.
Okay.
Or roll your window up.
Yeah. It was great though. The documentary's awesome. Now you got to watch it.
I don't want Sean to forget his thought. Because Sean, you about to say something.
Yeah, no, don't forget your thought. When you get settled, Sean, like pop in, because
Sean literally whipping around.
He's moving around.
I'm dropping Jordan off at work.
Oh, hey, all right, Jordan, have a good day. Hey. You said Bomani was saying something.
Bomani was saying that the actual movie, like the scenes of abuse were so over the top and so almost caricaturish that it almost made people hit up. Like, we, for many years, Eat the Cake was a joke,
it was a
funny
joke. And while this documentary didn't focus on Ike, it mentions the abuse through her lens, and it really shined a light on how fucking sadistic he was. Because obviously you can go only but so far in a movie.
Yeah.
But to hear in her words how she was beaten with a shoe stretcher, or she was beaten with a wire hanger, like on her ass, and he would literally have sex with her, like make her go get in the bed and then have sex with her.
Right.
And she's swollen.
Yeah.
That to me shed a level of, and that's what I said on Twitter. Like, I know we blamed the drugs. We blamed a lot of the drugs on Ike's behavior. He was going to do that shit, whether it was Tina Turner, or whether it was Betty, and he drove a bus for the city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoever was going to be that person in his life was going to get that level of abuse. It just doesn't seem like it could have been any other way. But
I agree.
I like the doc. It's time for her to kind of move on. Like you said, you know, she's 80 now, and she looks amazing. She's living a great quality of life.
She looks so good. Oh my God.
You know, God bless, right?
Yeah. I mean, on another note, it's interesting. So what was the name of this book? I can't remember. It was I think I've mentioned it on the show once or twice. It's a family called the Baskets. And they're from Harlem.
Willie Baskett.
So what they do in this book is very interesting, kind of to this Ike, David Ruffin and so many other those type of cats. What they did was Willie Baskett was this cat, younger at the time, and, you know, he's got kind of arrested for a bunch of kind of petty street crimes and stuff. And what they did was they did a study on his whole family. It traced back to South Carolina, was what the family is from.
Hold on, just to correct you a little bit. He was initially arrested for petty crimes and was doing like reformatory school, but he was really arrested. He was the first New York City, I think, kid that was like tried as an adult
for
a couple homicides. He had killed a couple people on the subway.
Yeah, yeah.
During different times, like he was just crime sprees during that 70s era.
Yeah, during that 70s, yeah. So what they did was they did a very interesting thing. So they traced his family history back to South Carolina. And apparently, South Carolina was during the slavery days, was, I guess, the Mississippi, but definitely South Carolina was one of the most brutal states because there was so many basically white trash people in South Carolina too. So everybody was living fucked up basically, right? So that their brutality from the white trash, they transferred their brutality to the black people, and the black people transferred that brutality down to their families. And so they were saying that that's how, Willie became this person because of his generations and generation of, and they talked about his father, his grandfather, and all the stuff they went through. My point to all that is, long thing to do, but it's very interesting how, Wilson Pickett, James Brown, Ike Turner,
the nature versus nurture,
and how all of those, and there's many others that I'm just not thinking about right now, of that era, Johnny Taylor, all those guys were brutal guys. Like they beat the shit out of women, they shot at each other, they were just like brutal people, and they all kind of come from the same era where that brutality was just a way of life.
Yeah, it was learned behavior for sure.
Exactly, and I'm not excusing any of it. But even our fathers and grandfathers, it's not just artists and stuff. It's people who kind of were born basically from around 1920 to 1940. Especially those guys were just like brutal guys. You hear about guys who moved to Chicago or moved to Harlem and like were like fucking brutal to each other, even in the North. Like they were just shooting and killing and got killed over a dice game. And it's just a very interesting sociological thing. But on the other side, a lot of those guys are also like mad talented. Like it'd be like, oh, this nigga could like remember the numbers without a book. Or he looked at somebody and learned how to tear a car engine apart and put it back together. Or like, it's just, I don't know. It's just a very interesting
thing. I think there is a lot to it. I think part of it is people coming from, and this, when you think about that era, like these are people coming from families who were sharecroppers and
cotton pickers, literally.
Yeah, it's a different level of poverty that they're coming out of. And it's a level of poverty with a certain kind of a necessary like survival practice, which is where like, I got my gun on me at the house.
At all times.
I'm going to stand on my porch and shoot you.
And I will let off.
Yeah, like
it ain't the show.
But also like a very frustrated, expression of, and it comes from like a lot. If I can't be a man out in the world, I'm gonna express my authority and my rage and my control in my house. So I'm gonna control my woman. I'm gonna control my kids. And like you said, I'm gonna transfer the way the world beats me down.
It's very connected to the famous Nikki Giovanni, James Baldwin.
Yeah, that conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why can't you lie to me too? Kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like you're gonna come home and be a monster because you can't be who you want to be in the world, and because it's the only place where you can. Like these are the only ways. If these are the only ways where you feel like you can express authority, right? You're going to take everything out there. And again, it's not an excuse, but there is psychology behind it.
It's a sociological thing.
Ike, you mentioned Rocket 88. And I think the thing with Ike is like, his whole life, Ike was like a much meaner, pettier, more evil Little Richard. He was like, y'all ain't never gave me credit for nothing. Mm-hmm. All this shit I did, all this talent I have, all these hits I make. I think Ike always felt like he was like this close to like blowing the fuck up, and it got snatched from him, right? I think he just felt like there were things he should have been, things he should have had that got snatched from him, and that was part of what his strong arm control of Tina was about. And again, it's not an excuse at all because Ike was a horrible fucking person, but he was also an amazing talent, a lot of which went unrecognized. Mm-hmm. Those things both are true.
I just tell people all the time, like, God bless him, when Little Richie was alive, people used to, like, he'd be on the shows and people be laughing. I'm like, he's not joking. He's not joking. Y'all could laugh all you want. He means that shit. Y'all never gave me nothing. He fucking meant that shit.
He's like, I started all this shit.
And all you motherfuckers know I started it, including you, Mick Jagger, this one and that one who learned shit from me. And now here I am at that time, probably in this like late 60s or 70s, and I'm giving awards out to y'all? Fuck y'all. Y'all know what, like, you know, again, he had that, you know, effeminate, you know, tone to his voice, and he was a funny person. So people were like, oh, Lovitz is crazy. I used to be like, no, that. He's not playing.
He meant that shit.
He meant that shit from his gut, you know?
Not to go on about it all day, but another, like, really cool part of the documentary was Tina talking about how she taught Mick Jagger to dance.
Yep.
And then at the end where Tina talks about being in love. Like, it's like her face softened and she turned into a little girl talking about her husband. Yeah. And I was like, I love that for you. And please leave America and never come back.
That was probably her first experience at, like,
that's what she said.
That's what she said. She never had it.
And that dude, like, loved her from the bottom of her feet to the top of her toes. And you could tell it wasn't about bread for him. He wasn't, like, trying to come up. He was just, that's my wife, and whatever she needs, that's what she's going to get. And that's, you know, I'm going to be there all the whole step of the way. It was again, it's an amazing documentary. Please watch it if you haven't. Let's talk about... You want to do some little gossipy shit? You want to talk about Quavo and Sweetie?
I mean, I'm always here for the mess, but that doesn't seem like gossip, though.
Yeah, well,
that just made me sad for everybody. Like, everybody in the Migos is trash at this point.
Okay, let me say this, and these are my views only. At the eight, and they're not children, right? They're not fucking 16, right? The Quavo's, I think, 29. I think Sweetie's about 25 or a bit younger than him. And again, I don't do domestic violence. I don't condone domestic violence at all. But when you're that young and you've got kind of like that paper and all these like, fuck niggas around you, gassing you up all the time, on both sides. I mean, on both sides. This is two, are like, things can kind of go left. When I watched that video, after the initial rush of them coming into the elevator, I could obviously, he was upset. Maybe I'm tripping, but I saw like, he was also like kind of concerned, like what the fuck is going on here? Like he wasn't like, bitch, get up off the ground. I didn't see that. I saw him being like what is happening here? Like what is, how did we, almost like, and I could be just reaching, but almost felt like he was almost like, how did it get here? Well, we're just, well, we're doing this. Like in an elevator.
You think
like,
maybe his action surprised even him?
Yes. I felt like it was almost like, he's almost like, yo, like what is going on? I'm talking total shit. I don't know anything. I think he really liked that girl. I really think he really liked, I'm not saying I'm going to get married. Or, I don't know. But I think he
genuinely liked her. You can have genuine love for somebody and there still be violence there.
Exactly. I think he genuinely loved her. I think she genuinely loved him. But they're just, it's a crazy situation that obviously went crazy left. And I'm not condoning. I'm not excusing shit. I want to make that 100% clear. But I didn't look at it the same as like the Ray Rice doc, the Ray Rice video. Well, he's like fucking.
Yeah, well, there was like a cold tone to that. Where, I knocked you out, and now shit, I gotta pay.
And I got to drag you off this fucking elevator. Like it was kind of that type of thing. I didn't get that from Quavo. I felt like he's just kind of like, oh man. And then when the elevator opens up, and somebody else is there, and he's like, oh man, like what the fuck?
I didn't see the whole clip. I'll just say I only saw the part where he kind of slung her
in the elevator. She fell on the ground.
And the doors closed.
Then they rolled to wherever they're riding. He's looking at the door. He doesn't really look back. And she's sitting on the ground, I'm assuming, like crying and stuff. And then towards the end of, before the doors open, I think the doors open one time and they don't get off. And there's another four or something. He kind of looks back like, you can't hear them, but he kind of looks back like, you're all right. Like, what's up? And then the doors open and somebody's there. Like somebody have, you know, to get on the elevator. And there's like huge embarrassment because the person's like, ah, do I get on? What's going on here? And Quavo's trying to hold the door. It was just a bad scene, man. I felt very bad for Sweetie. I don't want to say I felt bad for Quavo because that's not the right term, but I just felt like he was like, man, like I'm in a space that I never thought I would be in, kind of thing. I don't think he's gonna like a woman beater. That's my point. I don't think he's like a yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say that you're reaching. I mean, reaching is probably a strong word. I think that you're probably grasping for an excuse because you don't necessarily want to. You don't want to feel like I think that we look at everything in extremes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what happens is like when we hear the word abuse, right? Like we initially go to that would look like, right?
You go to Ike Turner.
Like Ike Turner.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think that we could admit that there are different levels here to this. And again, I don't have all the answers, right? Like I'm no doctor and I'm not in their relationship. And but as a man, particularly as a man who is conscious about how the conversations have been flowing about this particular topic, mm-hmm. for that to not be registering for you, like if this was 1987, I think we all look at this different. Shit, if this is 2007, I think we all look at this different.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I think that the conversation about what abuse looks like has changed and evolved in a way where I think we can admit when we see it.
Mm.
Right? Like it's almost like, yeah, that's not quite the most extreme thing, but it's not the issue we're talking about, right? Like it's you know what I'm saying? So that's what I think needs to happen here. And again, yes, yeah, I think we have to understand to some degree that we are talking about fairly young people. Young people tend to be high strung. They don't necessarily deal with high pressure situations in the best way, right? Particularly mm-hmm. when they're angry, mm-hmm. right? Like it's, and that's with men and women, right? Like, and that's not, and that's with the same sex, right? Like, you it's very rarely you will see two 50-year-old niggas fight, right? Like, they really gotta hate each other or something really bad happen. You know, 20-year-old niggas fighting in Walmart in aisle 4 and 17.
You took the last box of Cheerios.
and it's a fight. Boom. It's
popping. We getting it cracking. So,
I just think that that's the nature of it. And yeah, man, I think that he clearly fucked up. And I think this is also like one of those things where it might be ideal for you guys to like, when you got shit like this floating around, man, like keep your fucking mouth shut.
Yeah.
How about that? Yeah. How about you not be on the Twitters talking about I had love for you. And
I'm disappointed in you, but hey, you just did all
of this. How about you sit this one out, my nigga? Yeah.
Don't say nothing.
Have a seat, and like the young kids say, go sit down and eat your food.
Take care.
You should have sat there and ate your food. So yeah, man. I mean, they're not together now, and they, like Sean said, they are young, so who knows? I mean, they could be back together.
I mean, what relationship in anybody's early 20s is, stellar and without something?
But that was my point, Inka. Like, like bro always says, like, who are we?
Who are me?
Who are me to cast the first,
Yeah.
Also, we know Twitter is where nuance goes to die. We know that.
Out the fucking window.
And that's the other thing, right? Like, that's what I mean. Like, every single thing is extreme. There's no middle ground. There's no conversation. It's either yes or no. And I'm not saying that domestic violence is a middle ground or anything of the sort. No, but you have, but that's the issue though, Jeff, right? Like, you have to always preface that. You have to always couch your statements in that way because, I think that there are people who latch on to that because it's an easy topic to latch on to, right? Like to gain traction and attention. And I also think people latch on to it because they're triggered in a way that has them in a reactionary defensive stance, both of which are fair, right? Like, mm-hmm. you just some of your experience, right? It, you know, that's what it is. So that's what we're seeing, man. That young woman is going to be fine. Okay, there will be, you know, there will be no, you know, I'm sure she'll be fine.
Yeah. So
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, so let's move on. real quick, have y'all read this story about the reparations in Evanston, Illinois?
Yeah, I saw it. I actually saw it on, what's the CBS special, Soul of a Nation? I saw them talk about it.
Okay. No. So, Rob, you want to run with it?
Don't stop.
Go ahead, bro.
I wish I had more hands to give more thumbs down, nigga. Evanston, Illinois. Is, so I read the article when you sent over the topic because I hadn't heard about it. I was very interested in it. So yeah, Evanston, yeah. Illinois, as a way of an olive branch for what they're calling reparations.
Yeah.
They are basically giving people, black people, $25,000 to basically enhance their homes. And listen, far be it from me to not bend down to pick up 25 G's, right? Like, yeah, if 25 G's on the floor, I'm still bending down to pick it up, right?
Right.
But that is not reparations.
No. Okay, so I have context though. They are looking at it because the person who proposed this is black. They have a black mayor or something.
Yeah. Okay.
So she's bringing it from the point of view of trying to start correcting damage done from redlining. She's looking at it starting at redlining moving forward.
I'm clear on that context, and even in that context. It is not so what she's ultimately doing is a pilot program for her town.
Right.
You're giving $25,000 to people who, one, already own homes to enhance their homes. So what happens when they enhance their homes? The neighborhood values go up. What does that boast for a mayor? What does that boast for a city council? That is higher property taxes. That is higher home sale values, resale values, right? And you are able to use that in the context for re-elections. You're able to use that. It is, what I'm saying is, it is a self-serving proposition. It is a proposition in which the town also benefits.
Yeah.
So you are not giving me anything. You're basically saying, here's 25 G's for you to make your crib look nicer, and maybe you'll get that on the front end of the back end. But what we won't have to worry about is blight. We won't have to worry about, you know, people who are struggling to maintain their homes. Listen, 25 grand, depending on the home, is a substantial amount of money to improve your home. And also, depending on the home, it's not very much. Like, I looked at Evanston. That's a vast. I've seen houses for $900,000 in Evanston. I've seen houses for $500,000. Right? Like. So yeah, sure. $25K on a $400,000 home could be a substantial amount of money. Right? Like, you could probably remodel your deck. You could probably, you know, maybe redo some piping and redo some electrical work. Right? On a $900,000 home, my nigga, you get in the front door. Maybe. You clear, you know, maybe you got a little change left over. Y'all went out to the Del Frisco's for dinner. And that's it.
No landscaping, no new bushes.
Nothing. No landscape. Maybe you got some mulch. Maybe they did mulch. They did the mulch now.
They trimmed the tree.
Hey, mulch
trimmed
makes tree. A difference.
Yes, but I would have suggested a program that would have directly, and listen, I'm no economist, right? But like, if you told me, hey, we're going to say on these homes that you guys own, you guys don't pay your property taxes for the next 10 years. That's an incentive. We're going to keep this neighborhood pure. This is directly money that's going into your pocket. And they're not really kind of cheap. They're cheap, relatively speaking, for the Northeast in terms of like New Jersey and what we pay in property taxes, but they're not cheap. Like I've seen those homes. I went straight to Zillow. All my data was coming from Zillow. And they're paying between, you know, 12, 14,000, 15,000 a year.
So they're paying a decent amount of tax. Yeah.
Imagine a home that all of a sudden at the end of the year has an extra 15 G's at their disposal.
Yeah.
To either pay down debt, to either no longer incur debt, to either pay down the equity in their home or pay down their principal, to send a kid to college that their kids are not now incurring massive debt, right? Like if you want to really make the generational change, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm angry at this even being a thing. But the way it is
call it what it is,
some sort of initiative for the betterment, community enhancement or something like that. But you're not giving me 25 G's. Like if my house is perfectly fine, right, and my house is updated, where's my 25 G's? Yeah. I don't want to put it in my house.
Yeah.
I don't want to put it in my house. Yeah. Give me my shit in my hand. I'll take it in singles, nigga. I'll take it in wrapped coins. I'll go pick it up.
Tens and twenties. My argument for reparations has always been that Black people shouldn't have to pay taxes in general outside of sales tax.
Now, for how long?
Forever. That's my plan for reparations. Like, I shouldn't have to pay tax on shit.
I like that plan. Yeah. That plan is never going to happen, but I do like that plan.
Jesus paid it all.
I love it.
Jesus paid it up. Jesus paid for me. You pay for everybody behind Jesus is taken care of. I thought it was interesting that they called it reparations because, like Sean said, obviously it's not. It's like a home,
it's a home equity line.
Home equity, yeah, exactly. It's not reparations. I'm like, oh, what are y'all doing?
I know a HELOC plan when I see it.
Stop that bullshit, man. So yeah, I just thought it was a very interesting story, and there's been a lot of people. From what I've read, anyway, a lot of people are kind of on your side, Sean, are kind of like, what? This ain't really that, you know? But, some of the people in Evanston are like, give me my money. And I understand that because, like you said, who's walking away from 25?
It's six one way, half dozen another. Yeah. But I think that this is always an issue in a community, right? Is that the playing field is not leveled for everyone.
Exactly.
And the people, and again, you're not even giving people a percentage. Just to my previous example, right? It's not like you're saying, yo, man, here is, 5% of what your home value is to go into. Like, it's just a flat 25K. So whether you're in a fucking, so do I get 25K if I live in a townhouse?
Yeah.
I live in a two-bedroom townhouse.
Or
I get 25K.
Or a condo, right?
What if I own a trailer?
Exactly. What if I own a trailer? Right, yeah. Like I own just a lot of land. Is my 25 able to go into building? Like how does that even work? I'm just saying it is an easy. I don't want to be dismissive because that I'm sure there's people in Evanston that can use that 25K, but let's.
You're saying the framing is inaccurate.
The framing is grossly inaccurate. Yeah. The framing is actually worse to me than anything, because that's, I mean, again, I can't imagine how you're the beneficiary. The city is the beneficiary of this, not the people. The beneficiary in part, not the city, people in whole.
The city is winning.
Reparations
too.
Is about making someone whole, not about me giving you something that in turn is going to be beneficial to me.
Yeah,
it's like it's the reason you don't fucking pay tax on child support.
Exactly. So yeah.
By the way, Sean, you are the Pop Life Podcast resident economist, so don't be selling yourself short out
security
here.
Security expert, real estate expert,
loan expert,
financial.
I get your loan.
I call my man.
Yeah, my man, down to the bank. He got you.
Logistical tactician.
All that shit.
Television consultant.
With some niggas that survey it, and they come out with the little shit he do have to.
Oh, niggas around my way the other day.
I'm sure they was. I want to mention the Derek Chauvin trial started this week or last week? Monday, right? Yes. Yeah.
It feels longer because so much shit has happened. These testimonies are...
The testimonies are brutal. To be honest with you, I haven't been watching. I've been keeping up via social media and reading, but I haven't been actually watching. I watched the news in the evening, and so I'll see some clips on there, but I haven't been watching live because... I've never watched the video. It's such a traumatic...
I've never seen the video.
Such a traumatic... The situation is so traumatic that I just don't want to watch it. But I'm no lawyer, but from the front end anyway, you know these things take time. But from the front end, it seems like the prosecution is doing a stellar job of
or the defense is just doing a terrible job.
One of the two, a combo of the both, is showing that, as we all saw from the video, that Derek Chauvin is a fucking murderer. And went above and beyond to kill George Floyd instead of subduing him, as they say, air quotes. The testimonies have been riveting from the people. It's great that they got all the people that were standing there in front of the store. They talked to the guy who worked in the store who took the 20. And all of those people are like, basically, for lack of a better term, like we watched him murder him.
Yeah, I also want to come back to what you said about the guy in the store that took the 20 and remind everybody that this happened because it was thought that George Floyd might have passed off a counterfeit 20, which wasn't even counterfeit.
Yeah, it wasn't even a counterfeit bill. Yeah, he thought he was, and the kid said he contemplated
$20.
Not telling because, it was $20, but the way a lot of these stores work, if you were a cashier or something and you do take a counterfeit bill, if they find out it's counterfeit, it comes out of your pay.
The guy offered to pay for it, though. It was the store manager that called the police, which started the whole problem.
Exactly. The kid was like, yo, I got it. Don't worry about it.
If you are a store manager in any facet of sales or whatever, you don't call the police for that. That's $20. You report that to the bank.
You don't even know for sure if it's counterfeit. You just think it might be counterfeit. It was
It's just... It's disgusting from top to bottom, and I haven't watched any of it. The few times I tried to click in and just see what was going on with the trial, they were showing some part of the videotape, and I don't want to see the video. I have no desire to ever watch it, so I haven't clicked in.
So, peace and love to George Floyd's family. excuse me. And, you never know with these things because, we've seen it a million times where we thought things was one way and they were another, but so far, it seems like the prosecution is doing a great job, and the defense doesn't really have anything to stand on. It's just like,
I don't know how you got eight.
We heard he was high. I'm like, what that got to do with him getting murdered, bro?
So many pieces of it that are unjustifiable, like waving off the EMTs, not letting anybody get him help, kneeling where you were near. Like, there's so much of this that you just cannot answer for as defense. And I'm honestly wondering if he even takes the stand.
I wouldn't put him on a stand if I was an attorney. Not that I'm an attorney, but I thought what was interesting was that even the one of the women who I can't remember if she was like the EMT dispatch or somebody who had access to the cop's body armor, but whoever it was watching a live visual of things.
Yeah.
Her screen had frozen.
Yeah.
He was kneeling on him
for so long. Yeah. She's like, there's something wrong with my shit. Cause nobody's moving. So we'll keep abreast of that, but I hope this guy gets thrown under the jail. Last thing, Lil Nas X.
I love it. I love everything about it.
Lil Nas X is we know who he is. He's a young up and coming rapper. He had the biggest record of, I think, 19 was that? 19.
Was it 19? I think
it was 19. It wasn't 20s. So it was 19.
Yeah, 19.
Old Town Road.
The record that went on forever. I didn't think that shit was ever going to stop.
They were up to like 15 million singles or something.
So many remixes and like real remixes. I want to thank Lil Nas X for bringing the remix back. Because that wasn't just, send me some vocals. Like, This nigga did actual.
He was doing remixes. Yeah. And he put a song out about a week ago, called Montero.
I think it might have been like last Friday. Yeah. This is the first single off his sophomore project, so this is one that he's actually been able to plan for and.
But this is technically it's his first actual album.
Because
the other one was like an EP kind of thing. The song's called Montero, Call Me By My Name. And
Call Me By Your Name.
By New York, Your Name, excuse me. And has this very controversial video. Lil Nas X, as we know.
Garden of Eden and the fall theme.
Yes.
As Lil Nas X, people are only focusing on one part of it.
Is very is an openly gay man making music. And he puts out this video where
he's in the Garden of Eden and succumbs to the temptation and kind of goes along for the ride with the fall. So there's the serpent, but the serpent actually takes like a form where like he can actually try to make out with Nas
as a man,
and then Nas It looked like it could have been like a non-binary, whatever. Anyway, and then Nas.
I hate all that. I'm sorry. This is just me.
I know.
I still hate all that shit.
Non-binary. It didn't look completely like a man. The face maybe, but everything else, like, whatever. So, I don't want to get into all that and be wrong. Yeah. But, he goes before judgment. Then there's the fall. He descends into hell, but he descends into hell like on a stripper pole.
On a stripper pole.
And gives Satan a lap dance.
And then kills Satan.
Kill Satan at the end and takes a crown. And then the thing is that it's all very tongue in cheek because the young man's thing is my whole life. But it also fits with the song because the song is basically like, I know you're basically like who this object of his affection is clearly a bad influence. I don't give a fuck. Call me. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I'm down, right? Like, mm-hmm. you might take me into places I don't need to go, but I'm with it. And there's an intro at the beginning of the video that's talking about how people are trying to hide who they really are. And Montero is a place where you don't have to do that. Like this world that he's creating for this album, right? So there's that too. And, you know, I think Nas' thing was like my whole life, y'all keep...
you froze.
That's like...
Say it again. You froze.
I'm not sure what's happening right now with Nas.
Yeah, she's still frozen. Her face is frozen.
I'm still frozen.
You can talk now. Can you talk? Your face is frozen, but I think we can hear you. Oh no, still frozen. She'll pop back on in a second. What I found interesting about this whole, not just the video, but this whole thing is, this is what I took from the video and the kind of reading and, you know, other gay people were saying about the video and everything. What I took from it is Lil Nas X is basically saying, like, all my life I've been told because I'm gay, I'm going to burn in hell and I'm not going to be accepted. And I'm not going to be, I'm a bad person because I'm gay. And the devil's going to get me and I'm never going to be able to go to heaven. So he's almost like, he took the video as like, well, since I ain't going to heaven, I'm going to go to hell and have a good ass time. Because according to y'all, I don't have a shot to go to heaven anyway. So I might as well go to hell and make some fun and twerk on the devil and da 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 da. And I'll even take it to the point where I'll even kill the devil and become this other being because that's what you're telling me and my community that we are anyway. And it's kind of interesting because when this comes out, of course, a lot of people I feel like there's usual on Twitter and other social media didn't watch the video. They just saw a clip or they saw pictures of Nas twerking on the devil and ran with it and didn't really understand what he was trying to say overall and kind of did exactly what he was saying in the video. he's going to go to hell and how can he do that in front of our kids? And like he kept saying, first of all, he is the king of trolls. I don't understand why anybody's going for
Lil Nas. He is so good at the internet, like you're not going to win.
Leave him alone, bro. It's an L. But also, it's like people of that ilk tend to always bring the kids first. Oh, my kids. How could you do this for the kids? Even Game, the rapper's like, yo, Old Town Road was a big record for the kids. And now you done flipped it. And no lie, this is like, yo, bro, I was talking about drinking lean in Old Town Road. You know that, right? Like, it wasn't a clean record. You just didn't pay attention. Like, I was talking
also
crazy in that record, too.
And there's then, a I'm reason like, the I'm game like, was trending for being one of the five corniest niggas that people
exactly. Play. And nigga, exactly. It's not my job to raise your children. I'm making records, the records and the visuals that I want to make. And if you don't want to watch them, don't watch them. But don't watch them and then get mad because I put them out. Especially because in the game, nigga, you've been flagrant in so many ways. Like, who are you to tell somebody else as an artist what to do or not do? But it was just interesting that people, I didn't want to say falling for the trap because I don't know if maybe it was a trap, maybe it wasn't. I don't know if he did it on purpose, but people were just kind of like proving his point over and over again by being so mad at him, and then the sneakers come up on top of that, and it's supposed to be blood in the back of the sneakers. And I did a little research on these because I was like, Nike really put these out, but then I found that there's a company called Mischief based in Brooklyn, and they kind of do these type of things. So they basically found some Nike, some Air Maxes, you know, unused or whatever, but they basically kind of take something and bought them. And put a spin on themselves. So it's not a Nike release, which is why Nike.
Well, they did a Heaven release, apparently.
Yeah, you guys can hear me now, right?
Yeah, they did a Heaven release, apparently. I just wanted, since I was.
Yeah, go ahead, because you finished before.
Yeah, I was saying basically what you said, Jeff, that this was Lil Nas X saying, y'all always say I'm going to hell because of who I am and how I am. So this is what that would look like for me. Exactly. And it's also like, let me show you how that would get down. But even the people like saying, you know, it's wrong and it's blasphemous, y'all are full of shit. Like South Park had a whole character of Satan who was in like a relationship like with Saddam Hussein in hell, like all the time. Match.com did a whole campaign last year where Satan met 2020 and on Match.com and they fell in love. Like they had a person.
Oh yeah, the commercial.
It was a whole campaign. It was like
five. That's a great commercial. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's a great commercial. But like, there is not. They be like, y'all play with God too much. There are no Jesus or Christ or God figures in this video. Like there's no blasphemy here, right? But it really is depicting the fall, and we have countless movies, videos, everything that depicts the fall from grace to hell. Like it's one of man's favorite themes to talk about, but it's a spin. And people are like, oh, but when he puts the crown on his head and he takes the wings himself, I'm just like, y'all gotta fucking relax. Like, for real, it's not. And I love that. I really hope it's on purpose that he dropped it right before Holy Week, before Easter,
because he seems very calculated. Like, he's thinking.
Yeah. Well, he said one of his tweets was like, I had 9 months to plan this rollout, bro. You are not going to win. Like, it's just like, I was like, it's, and I say this as y'all know who are listeners, I am a Christian. I think this shit is brilliant. I think it's brilliant. And I think that a whole lot of people ascribe what they feel like is offensive and would offend God and who don't actually know shit about the word, scripture, context, like nothing. Because
niggas are splitting now into like, oh, it's record companies trying to, you know, get the kids, and this is, you know,
the Illuminati.
And all that bullshit, man. Y'all niggas.
Somebody was like, yo, he killed the big boss. Like, how can you possibly be mad? And I'm like, that's my, like, whatever.
He killed the devil. Did y'all not know that?
He seduced the devil. He played the devil's own game. He seduced him and killed him.
Yeah.
And like, also, Lil Nas X is not the Wiggles. Like, he's not here. For you now.
Ain't Sesame Street, bro.
That's nice that y'all thought Old Town Road was cute. But
old ass references for kids shows don't exist.
Yeah, we out the loop. No. I don't know what
that shit don't come on no more.
I end around the Teletubbies era.
At least I didn't say Bert and Ernie. I'm just saying, like, well, they're still around. But still, I'm just like, he's not a children's entertainer. Yeah. And you're right. People always go to the kids first because, you know, you want to actually, because they don't want to say, I'm just offended because of my own judgmental ass.
That's it. I mean, to me, this one last thing from my perspective, like, I just, yo, he's a brave kid, man. Like, he's harder than a lot of you motherfuckers, these other rapping niggas, because he's brave, because he's putting himself out there. He's like, this is who I am, and this is my vision, and I'm not being dissuaded in any way from doing what I want to do. Again, you can like it or not like it. That's a whole different conversation.
He's also very comfortable in who he is.
I was getting ready to say,
that's why this shit don't work.
He's playing with the house's money.
Exactly.
He's playing with the house's money right now.
You can't shake somebody who is comfortable in all this shit. Like, you can't, you can't.
Ain't gonna be no gotcha moments. Like, nah, oh, shit. Nah. It's like, nah, nigga. What do you think, bro?
I'm indifferent. I'm interested in the lawsuit. Right, like I'm indifferent about him creating the shoes and the devil.
He's not named in the lawsuit. Just that company.
I know because they are ultimately seen as a manufacturer, right? Like that's kind of what they've done, right?
Yeah, it's
copyright infringement, all of that sort of stuff. So I'm interested to see because Nike is at the point where you know they're operating with the killing an ant with a sledgehammer mode.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested to see what that means for these sort of smaller companies that have been out here doing this.
Yeah.
But, you know, God bless the kid. You know, he stirs shit up. He leaves. He comes back. He pops his head in. He leaves. He stirs some more shit up. You know, like, God bless. He's a kid to me. So there's nothing he's doing that is piquing my interest in anything other than an entertaining fashion, right? Like, I had no intentions on buying the 666 sneakers, right? Like, I was not finna be on the sneakers app.
You got them.
Yeah. Anybody else complaining about this? Neither were you, okay? Your kids are not buying $1,000 sneakers.
Exactly.
You don't own them.
And people love to invoke Christianity sort of as a convenient way for them to be an asshole to other people and to conveniently deal with homophobia. That's how they kind of guise it, couch it in that Christianity, and this is what the Bible said. Well, the Bible says you shouldn't have fucking sick baby mothers either, nigga, and that hasn't stopped you. So you don't even see your son. You ain't seen your son in 5 years. The Bible say anything about 10 kids, kids, nigga?
Exactly. And to end it, I saw Donnie McClurkin, and I guess he has Uncensored too, or Unsung, one of the two. I haven't watched it, but I saw a clip. And to kind of like, to this point, Donnie McClurkin in the clip that's floating around talks about his homosexuality. And while he says he kind of was delivered, but he's kind of not, he said he says that he's had relationships with men. He's had relationships with women.
Thank God he's saying that out loud. Amen.
He said that he was delivered, but he said he's not comfortable with women because he doesn't really know what a woman wants, which tells me, bro, you're gay.
So
and that's fine. And then it's fine. And then he says, so basically, I'm gonna spend my life alone for the rest of my life.
Donnie McClurkin was engaged with somebody until like 2 minutes ago.
Go ahead, bro.
I wish him well. I really do. But I don't know what women want. It's a little bit of a cop out to me. I think you can easily find out, right? Like
Do you want to know, nigga?
I think you can ask a woman, right? Which is kind of like, hey, what would you like? You like feet rub? You want me to fix you some eggs in the morning, nigga? Like, what do you? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just saying the process of dating is getting to know what a woman would like, right? Exactly. Like, you don't wake up.
I just say
like,
person, because every woman doesn't like the same thing. But that nigga saying,
and I think that's what he led to. Like, if you listen to the rest of the clip, there was some level of ambiguity to when he was referring to a spouse.
Yes.
And he specifically says spouse. He doesn't say wife.
Yes.
He doesn't, so he's very clear and pointed in what he's saying. And I think, God bless him. I wish he, can, I really do want to, first of all, I think he's mean, right? Like, I think Sunday best shit.
I've heard he's mean as.
Yes.
But he was on Jive. So I've heard.
I don't necessarily like him. But I don't want to see anyone tortured and, yes. and live in this cage.
Yes.
And be sort of, you know, sort of, you know, that just to me just seems like a terrible existence for anyone. Even if I think you're a mean, you know, nasty person yeah. to people who are, you know, looking for your approval you know, on a fucking television show. Mm. I just don't think he deserves that. And so I'm glad that he's sort of working and walking in that path. And it sounds to me like that's what he's doing. He's trying to set the tone
yeah.
for whatever it is he decides he wants to try. And maybe he does have some confusion, or maybe he does have, not confusion, that's the wrong word. Maybe he does have feelings for both sexes. That is possible. That's not
possible.
You know what I'm saying? That's not like unheard of, right? Like yeah. he's not a fucking unicorn because yeah. he likes men and women, right? Like that, he just needs to find out whatever is his thing.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear though that he is saying it out loud as a pastor and such a renown, because that whole Donnie McClurkin got delivered from homosexuality shit, it was like, bruh.
Ridiculous.
Have you seen Donnie McClurkin on TV? Yeah. Have you ever heard him talk? Yeah. That man is gay as Christmas.
But my thing is like, this is what Lil Nas X is like. Y'all not gonna do this to me.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen this movie, you know, so many times, you know, in church or whatever, where it's like, you know, they push you to be something that you just aren't, and you're miserable for it. And Donnie, like, vocalizing that, you know, and again, it wasn't, nobody timed it. It just, that's his clip came out as around the time as the Nas X thing. But like, it was like, wow. So like, he's, you know, Lil Nas X is basically saying like, I know what happens if I let y'all push me into a corner. I'll become that, you know, like I'm become right. the guy who marries a woman and, you know.
But that's also, also a very generational thing.
The
generation that he is of and he is speaking to, they are not into titles. They are not into these grandiose things that we sort of, these sort of very hardline mm-hmm. identifiable things that we grew up with and that we were a part of. And so what I think he is also saying is that I don't need your approval. I'm not interested in your approval, and actually is making a mockery of the fact that you think your approval is something to be worthy of.
Exactly.
Right? Like he's, you know what I'm saying? It's very clear the yeah. shit that he does.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whether it's to that, to that sort of holier than thou crowd or to the rap establishment.
Yeah.
Like, word?
That's what I was saying to people on Twitter. I was like, yo, I ain't fuck with Lil Nas X. I'm like, you ain't fuck with him anyway. Like, what are you talking right. about?
He had one song.
He never fucked with him anyway. One
song. First of all, he had one song.
Yeah.
He had exactly. one song, right? Like, so let's not make it seem like you fucking 9 albums and 12 source covers into yeah. a nigga's career, okay? Yeah. Let's fucking take it easy, dude. Like, yeah. 3 years ago, the kid was making Twitter threads.
Exactly.
Right?
Living in
Stop
his sister's
it.
Basement. You know what I'm
Stop
saying?
It.
Like, yeah.
Stop
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, well, I ain't fucking with that nigga. I'm like, were you ever? Like, you're not his fan base. And I saw yesterday.
Go watch Ray and Ghost on repeat, nigga. Go down to Jimmy Jazz, okay? Word. Get you in the 4X Champions.
Word.
And stop it.
Some all white Air Force
Ones. Go to Vims, nigga, and get some white on white.
Word. Well, with the matching hoodie,
with some bedazzled jeans. Word, fuck out of here, word, man. Word. With the rig, you know, with the funny looking shit in the front of the jeans that you wearing now, old niggas.
I saw Nas, looks like Nas's song is gonna come in number one on the Billboard 100. So it's like, his fans like it. Somebody's liking it.
The song itself is not bad. I'll be honest. It's a dope song, but also the video is visually dope. Like,
yeah.
Shout out to Columbia for
Columbia food. Spent some bread. They spent some bread. You know, so I said, y'all got any shout outs, anything before we wrap it up?
I just want to shout out. First of all, I want to say happy Resurrection Sunday in advance.
This oh, yeah.
Tomorrow happy good Friday. Resurrection.
Oh, tomorrow is Good Friday, right?
Jeez. Yeah, and I hope everybody got your fits and your menus together for the verses on Sunday.
Oh, nigga, you know I'm coming. Clean. I'm gonna give me a bottle of Christian Brothers.
No.
I'm gonna press this suit out.
Woo!
Pop it.
Oh, you know, yeah, nigga.
I think I might pull a little bottle of white Hennessy.
This feels like a one of them flavored crown moments.
Oh, crown apple.
Oh, this is this definitely.
This is a crown, this crown is apple moment.
Or the crown peaches.
Crown vanilla.
There you go.
So yeah, we are definitely gonna spend some time on the Verses next week.
Peace to Steve Harvey hosting. Yeah,
exactly. Too. Steve Harvey hosting.
I know for this audience, it's super audience, annoying, it's but I think it fits. Yeah, I think
for them, it's bullseye.
That's what he does.
Old niggas yelling and talking shit. God damn, you ain't play that. Oh, hell no, nigga, you ain't play that.
You know, I think with the artists we have, we do need somebody that's going to push it along.
Yeah, true. Thank you, Ivy. We're going to ask you about it next week. But yes, yeah, so that's it. Nobody got any more shout outs? Y'all good?
Nah, we good.
Ink always got one.
I got to say, happy birthday to my wonderful husband.
Happy birthday, Travis.
Gang. Yeah.
Happy birthday to Travis Porter. Tell him to watch that Justice League this weekend.
Wait, speaking of which, I'll bring this conversation next week. But Jeff, I have to ask you how, because Travis Porter was on Jive, right?
Yeah, I signed him.
I really need an explanation on how that was a group, not an individual, and nobody was named Travis Porter. But okay. We can talk about that.
Well, I'll hold this for you next week. It's a good explanation too.
Okay. All right, guys.
All right. On that note, we'll see y'all next week. Happy Easter to everybody. Keep wearing your mask. Email us with any comments. Questions
or email,
criticism. I check it from time to
Nobody's reading that email.
We get a couple emails. We got some emails. That nigga's answering emails
from December of 2019.
Well, a couple of them was old, but I got some emails.
Jeff also uses that email address for random ass music shit, which is why I don't check it. I'd be like having all kind of demos and SoundCloud.
I might check it this evening.
Y'all can tweet us. You should check that.
All right, we see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.